Okay, thank you all very much for coming, and just a second, what Ben mentioned, that our learning should be a merit, Lili Nishmas, Asher Dov, Ben Ruben Ephraim, and Pinchas Ben Yosef, whose yard site is tonight. And it's really a tremendous privilege to learn halacha together. So I prepared some sources. There's English, there's Hebrew. But really, please feel free to raise questions on what we're learning or other topics. It's a tremendous privilege to learn halacha. I had the privilege about a month ago to be in Israel with a group from the shul. And one of the members of the trip had a connection to the current chief rabbi, Rav Yitzchak Yosef. Rav Yitzchak Yosef is the son of Rav Ovadia Yosef. And so we went to meet with Rav Yitzchak Yosef. And he kept telling us, learn books of halacha. Everybody should learn halacha. So one person said, you know, I have relatives aren't that religious. Learn books of halacha. Bar mitzvah boys, learn books of halacha. And then he said to me, he said, you know, there's a famous Gemara. The Gemara says that once the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, Ein lo l'HaKadosh Baruch Hu ba'olamo ela dalet amal shel halacha. If you want to find God in his world, you find him in the 6 feet of halacha, the 4 cubits, the 4 amos of halacha. So he said, the Gemara is telling you, that's the way to get inspired. That's the way to connect to the Almighty, is to learn halacha. And therefore, it's very, very special to learn halacha. Rav Soloveitchik, who was really such a giant of Torah and inspiration, Rav Soloveitchik wrote a book called Halachic Man, which is really to give the spirituality of a real Lithuanian perspective. And in that book, Halachic Man, Rav Soloveitchik talks about a mystical person. A mystic looks at the stars at night and feels there's a lot of mystery and so much which is unknown, and I surrender to God because I don't understand things that are in the world. A scientist is very different. He looks at the stars at night and he starts calculating mathematical formulas and, well, why is this star in this position tonight and it's at another position on another night? And based on these calculations, he can start figuring out how he's going to send a rocket and how he's going to, you know, put a satellite, where he's going to put the satellite and how he's going to have, you know, satellite communications, and he's always trying to understand everything, and through understanding everything, to manipulate things. So Rav Soloveitchik said a person who's a halachic man is in between those two, in a certain way has the advantages of both. He's connecting to what's mysterious, to God, but it's very, very practical. A halachic person is finding God in life. What do I do when I wake up in the morning? When I look at the river, I start thinking of halacha categories. Well, a river, is that, would that work for immersion? You know, if somebody's a zav, he has to go to a mikvah, which is spring water. Is this spring water? Is this rain water? A halachic person is always, he's practical, but he's transcendent. In that being so practical, he's connected to something which is beyond. So that's really the tremendous privilege of learning halacha together. When we learn halacha, we have this privilege of connecting to something heavenly, but in a very practical way. So we're going to learn, God willing, Hilchos Shabbos. There are a lot of amazing books on Hilchos Shabbos. I recommend all of them. All great. So we were looking for something that, you know, where to start with. There are different styles of books on Hilchos Shabbos. There's a beautiful book that was put out by Rabbi David Ribiat from Muncie. It's 4 volumes. It's called The 39 Malachos. It's a really beautiful book where he defines each malacha, and he'll tell you then applications of that definition. So let's take the first malacha, plowing. The definition of plowing is to soften up earth in order to be able to drop seeds in it. So now all sorts of applications of plowing. You know, smoothing out the dirt outside with a broom, sports, playing sports on a dirt floor, gets involved with plowing, all the applications. That's one beautiful style, you know, a definition and then applications of it. There's another really wonderful book on Hilchos Shabbos called Shmirah Shabbos Kihilchasa that was written by a student of Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach of blessed memory, Rabbi Yoshua Neuwirth. And it's also an amazing book. It was really the first book of its style, very practical, modern Hebrew, just clear directives of the halacha and how to apply the halacha. So a lot of different styles. Obviously, the Mishnah Berurah is a great text for learning Hilchos Shabbos. But I thought it would be nice to use Rav Yosef Tzvi Rimon's book as the text. Rav Rimon's style is to try to give background. And the hope is that if a person sees the Gemara, of course, every Gemara is based on a Mishnah. Mishnayos are based on the Psukim. But if you see the Gemara, and then you see the Rishonim, and you see how the Shulchan Aruch took from the commentary of the Rishonim his bottom line, it gives hopefully a little bit more appreciation for the halacha. Sort of, when you see the principles and you see the development of the halacha, hopefully that gives a person more appreciation, and then maybe we'll remember in a better way the final application. So Rav Rimon recently published a book on Hilchos Shabbos. It's about a year old. It's two volumes. It only deals with the first 11 malachos. The first 11 malachos are famous. They're called the Sidura de Pas, the order of making bread. So that's his book. It's in Hebrew and in English. And so anyone who's interested, God willing, let us know, and we'll order books from Rav Rimon. I didn't know how many to order from him, so just give us a sense of how many we should order, and it would be a great thing to have. We'll use it as our basic text, and then we'll hopefully extend out from there. So I made a photocopy of his first essay. That's where this sheet comes from. I made a Hebrew sheet, but the essay has a lot of the sources in English as well. So one of the malachos of Shabbos that is quite involved is the issue of cooking on Shabbos. So just two words again of introduction, and we'll get into the sources. When we deal with Hilchos Shabbos, what are the things that we are not allowed to do? Where do they come from? What are the malachos, the definition of creative work? How do we know what's creative work and what's not a creative work? What's the source of malachos for Shabbos? The Mishkan, right? The source is the Mishkan. The Torah says multiple times, lo sa'aseh malacha, don't do work on Shabbos. And many times the Torah puts, don't do work on Shabbos, right next to, but do work to make the Mishkan. So whatever was needed to build the Mishkan, that's what we can't do on Shabbos. So there were 39 primary activities that were needed to make the Mishkan. Now, what the Mishkan, when we think of the Mishkan, there's the walls of the Mishkan, there's the roof of the Mishkan. The roof of the Mishkan was four tapestries. Some of them were four covers. Some of the covers were made of skins, oros tachash, from seal skins, oros elim ma'adamim, ram skins that were ma'adamim, that were dyed red. And then there were these yurios. Yurios are almost curtains or carpets, woven screens that were put on top of the Mishkan. To the strings that were woven together were made of wool, and the wool was dyed, either dyed red, that was tola ashani, or dyed purple, argaman, or dyed blue, tcheles. And you had sheish was linen that doesn't catch a dye, so that was basically white. So the process of making those tapestries was necessary in the Mishkan, and therefore all the activities that go into making the tapestry is a malacha. So one of those activities is the malacha of bishul, cooking. Because in making a dye, you have to take the kernels from the plant, the kernels from the argaman plant, the blue indigo plant, and you have to grind up the kernels into little paste, and then put it into a pot, put water in, put the pot over coals, over a source of heat, and cook it. And the more it cooks and stews, it eventually becomes a thick dye, and then the wool can be put into it and dyed into a particular color. So in the Mishkan, there was bishul. There was the cooking of the saman manim, the cooking of the dyes that was necessary in order to make the tapestries. So therefore, one of the malachos is bishul. Now this malacha is in many ways very, very detailed. Just as we're familiar probably with some of these concepts, there's the concept of Kli Rishon, Kli Sheni, and Kli Shlishi. So Kli Rishon means that the vessel in which the item was heated. So let's take in a home, very practical application is a boiler. A boiler is a Kli Rishon, because when I have a boiler in my basement, there is a source of heat there on the tank, and that source of heat keeps the water hot. So if I want to go and take a shower, I turn on the faucet to make it hot, to let out hot water. Hot water is going to come out of the boiler. The boiler is filled with hot water. As hot water comes out of the boiler, new water flows right in. And that water is going into this utensil that's on heat. So it's going into a Kli Rishon. Kli Rishon is mevashel. Kli Rishon cooks. So right away, anytime on Shabbos, we can't put anything into a Kli Rishon because that's going to cook right away. So if I turn on the hot water to take a shower, if I turn on the hot water to wash dishes, right away, by turning on the hot water, I'm opening up, I'm causing hot water to come out of the tank of the boiler. And if I leave it on for, I don't know, 20 minutes or so, there was some hot water that came out. Now there's going to be a need for new water to come in. The new water that comes in, that's cooking. I'm cooking that hot water by bringing it into the Kli Rishon. Then you have Kli Sheni. So if I turn on the water, the boiler is the Kli Rishon. I turn on the hot water faucet, it goes into a cup. In this cup, the water wasn't heated. This is a secondary cup. This is a secondary level. Now, Kli Sheni normally doesn't cook. Kli Sheni ain't no mevashel. There are exceptions if you have something which is kali habishel, things that get cooked very easily. The Gemara gives an example of certain types of herring, certain types of fish. You put this hot water on them, even if it's, you know, cool down hot water, because it's in a secondary vessel, it could get cooked there too. So we're not sure about tea. Is tea kali habishel? Is tea not kali habishel? Chazon Ish thought it's okay to put tea in just a regular cup. But we're not sure. Maybe tea is also something which is easily cooked. So then you have Kli Shlishi. And then you're certainly okay. There's certainly no cooking in a Kli Shlishi. So if you have, let's say, an urn. So you have an urn. You pour the urn is the Kli Rishon. It's the direct utensil. I couldn't put new water into the urn. I couldn't. But the water in the urn is a Kli Rishon. I open up the urn and put it into a cup. That's Kli Sheni. Kli Sheni, some people think I can already put the tea bag into it. Other people say, no, maybe the tea gets cooked very quickly. So I can pour it into a second vessel, pour it into another cup. Once it's in another cup, it's a Kli Shlishi. There's certainly no cooking. So in a Kli Shlishi, I could put a tea bag, I can put in coffee beans, no problem. There's no cooking in a Kli Shlishi. So these are famous concepts, Kli Rishon, Kli Sheni, Kli Shlishi. It becomes very complicated. Is this a Kli Sheni? Is it a Kli Shlishi? People get confused. Am I allowed to put the tea bag in? Not allowed to put the tea bag in? So why don't we make it easier? Why don't we just say, you know what, nothing hot. Stay away from anything hot on Shabbos. Don't have any such issues. We also have all sorts of issues of keeping food hot on a blech and covering it, insulating it, hatmana, chazara, shehiya, all these issues. So why don't we just keep it easy? Don't have anything hot. Just eat cold cuts on Shabbos. Cold cuts, bread. Make it easy. Don't have to have all the challenges of how to apply the laws of what is cooking, what isn't cooking. So that's the first source here on the Hebrew sheet. Why don't we make everything easy? Why is it that we have all these challenges of cooking? So the source is from the Baal HaMaor. The Baal HaMaor was one of the great Rishonim. He lived in Provence. He lived in the area between France and Spain. He wrote a book filled with criticisms of the Rif, of Yitzhak Alfasi. And the Ramban, who was a contemporary in the 13th century, wrote a book to defend of Yitzhak Alfasi. So, The Baal HaMor, in the end of his commentary to the beginning of the third chapter of Masech the Shabbos, says, V'yesh omim, some explain, ki takanas raboseinu hi la'anegas ha-Shabbos b'chamin. There is a rabbinic law obligating us to enjoy Shabbos by eating hot food on Shabbos. If you have cold food, it doesn't taste so good. If you have hot food, that's much more enjoyable. And so there's a rabbinic enactment that we are obligated to eat hot food on Shabbos day. We shouldn't just have cold cuts and cold kugel and a piece of bread. We should have hot food on Shabbos. Why is it so important to have hot food on Shabbos? Because throughout Jewish history, we have had heretical groups. Groups who want to say they're the real Jews, they're good Jews, and the Jews who keep tradition have it wrong. So one of those groups were called the Karaim, the Karaites. And they were very similar to a group in the times of the second Beis HaMikdash called the Tzedukim, the Sadducees. And the Sadducees and the Karaites, they did not accept the traditions of the Gemara, of the Mishnah. They said the rabbis had it wrong. They are going to read the verse. And what the verse tells them, that's what they're going to do, based on the verse. Now there's a verse in the Torah says, Lo tevaru esh, don't kindle a fire wherever you live on the Sabbath day. They said, what does that mean? It means you can't have a fire burning. You can't have any lights going on Friday night. Fire burning. You can't have any hot food on Shabbat day. Because to have hot food, you have to have a fire burning. And you can't have a fire burning on the Sabbath day. That's the way they read the verse. Now, we don't read the verse that way. We read the verse as you cannot kindle the fire. You cannot start a fire. But if the fire was started from before, you can leave it going. So we wanted to show them wrong. And therefore, there's a rabbinic enactment that since we have a mitzvah to enjoy Shabbos, we have to enjoy Shabbos in a way that shows that the tzedukim were wrong. And we have to have hot food on Shabbos day. Takanas raboseinu hi la'anigas ha-Shabbos b'chamin. It's an enactment of our rabbis to enjoy the Shabbos by having hot food on Shabbos day. V'chol mi she'eino ochel chamin. Anyone who's not going to eat hot food on Shabbos day, tzarich bedika acharav im humin. You need to start investigating. Maybe he's a heretic. Maybe he's a Sadducee. That's why he doesn't want to have hot food. Why would he want to have hot food? We know you're allowed to do it. And since we're allowed to do it, we should do it. Because it adds to the enjoyment of Shabbos. Says the Baal HaMor imate. If this fellow who doesn't want to have hot food on Shabbos dies, Jews shouldn't bury him. Yisasku bo amin. Let the Goyim bury him. Because maybe he's not a believer. So let the non-Jews bury him. And then he says, Ulahazmin, and to prepare, Levashel, and to cook, obviously before Shabbos, Lahatmin, and then to take the food and to put it in a way where it's going to stay insulated and hot onto Shabbos. Ula'anigas ha-Shabbos, to enjoy the Shabbos. Ula'hashmin, and get yourself fat on Shabbos. As he says, eat the fatty foods. Get yourself nice and fat. They didn't have cardiologists back in the 13th century. But in the 13th century, they thought it was a good thing to try to become fat. So if you go and try to become fat on Shabbos, hu amanin, somebody who does that, he's a believer. The zocheh l'keitz hayamin, he's going to merit the redemption. There are some people who are wise, they say the left is really the right. Anu Korin Alein, we say about them, we say about them, I wish you'd be quiet and then you'd be wise. Shut your mouths and that'd be smarter than showing off your foolishness. So he says there's a big deal to try to have hot food on Shabbos. We want to have hot food on Shabbos. We want to show that the Sadducees are wrong. We want to enjoy Shabbos. Oh, but on the other hand, we just learned that there's a malacha. We're not allowed to cook on Shabbos. So that's where we get into all these challenges. We can't go on Shabbos and put a pot onto the fire and cook something because that would be bishul. That's
so what we're going to do. Can we say potentially together? I mean, because think about if we were to not have pot on Shabbos, we would avoid all these potential conflicts and issues that we run into.
Right. Right, but so, even so, right, even though obviously we're going to make a lot of fences to keep us from violating things, but it's so important for Onik Shabbos, to enjoy Shabbos to the maximum, and lahotzi miliban shel tzukin. So important that when we see, distortions, to say, well, they got it wrong. This is the right way to do it. So, based on that, that's what we're going to have challenge. It's going to be a little bit complicated, but it's not so hard. We can get it all done, Be'ezrat Hashem, and really enjoy Shabbos and learn. Actually, once you learn the halachas, you'll find leniencies too. You see that certain things that we thought we couldn't do, really we could do, which is always exciting. All right, so what is the malacha of Bishul? What is the malacha of Bishul? How would you translate the word Bishul?
To cook,
right? Adam says to cook. So if we go to the Gemara, and Rabbi Mon quotes it here in the English as well. If we go to the Gemara in Masechta Shabbos on Daf Ayin Zalim, the Gemara discusses the Mishnah. The Mishnah listed the 39 malachos. So amongst the malachos is halash, the person who kneads the dough, v'ha'ofeh, and the one who bakes. So that's the Mishnah. Ask the Gemara, Amar Rav Papa, Rav Papa said, Shavak Tana didan bishul samimanim da'avim mishkan v'nakat ofeh? Our Tana left the cooking of the spices, because that's what happened in the Mishkan. He doesn't talk about that. He talks about baking. Why doesn't he talk about cooking spices? Talk about bishul. Why use the word ofeh, baking? Then he answered, Tana didan sidura de pas nakat. Our Tana, he's taking the order of how to prepare bread. So if you look down into the next source, the third source, Rashi, on this line, Rashi says, v'nakat ofeh. The question is, he talks about baking. There was no baking to build the Mishkan. Answer the Gemara, Sidur the Pas, the order of bread. Shehitchil bo nakat, that's how what he had started with plowing and planting, it's all to make bread. For ofa b'makam bishul d'samanim hu. Baking is in the place of cooking. To hu bishul d'pas, it is the cooking. It's just the cooking of bread. Rashi tells us apparently a very interesting thing. The definition of cooking is not, cooking with a liquid per se. Cooking means bread too. Making bread, baking bread is the same thing as cooking. So why is that? Why is baking bread the same as cooking? So let's go back to the Gemara. Again, it's the second source, the second line. The Gemara says, Amar Rav Acha bar Rav Avira, Rav Acha, the son of Rav Avira, said, Haiman deshada sikta la'atuna. A person who takes a wooden peg that they're going to put at the edge of a tent to hold the tent in place, and he throws it into an oven. Chayiv mishum mevasha. That person is guilty for cooking. Taking a peg of wood, putting it into an oven, is cooking. So Gemara says, Pshita, of course that's cooking. So Gemara Ma'aretim would have thought to say, "V'shurei mana kamachavin." He's trying to make this peg stronger. And that's not cooking. Kamash on the Chiddush is no. Demir for Rafi. First, the peg through the heat gets soft, and then when it gets soft because the water evaporates, v'hadar kamit, and then it gets hard. So the Gemara says an amazing thing. The Gemara says baking, according to the way Rashi reads it, that's basically a form of cooking. And then the Gemara says, cooking is not only about food. Cooking is to take a piece of wood, throw a piece of wood into an oven, and through the heat, this wood now becomes hard. That's also included in bishul. So what is the definition of bishul? So look now to the Rambam. The Rambam is the fourth set of Hebrew writing here on this page. The Rambam is in Hilchos Shabbos, Perek Tes Halacha Aleph. The Rambam says, Ha'ofe kigrogeres chayiv. If a person takes a fig worth of dough and bakes it, he is guilty for violating Shabbos. Echad ofes hapas, whether you are baking bread, or mevashel samacha, or cooking a dish, or samamanim, or cooking a color, a dye, or mechamim esamayim, or if you heat up water, Hakol inyan echadu, it's all one idea. Shira machayim mesamayim, the definition of how much water, or the measure of how much water, if you heat, is a problem. Kedei lirchutz ben eiver katan, enough to wash one little limb of a person. Veshira mevashal samamanim, and the amount of cooking a dye, is kedei shiyehei ru'uyim l'davar shemevashim oso lo. It's to make it fit for anything that they would cook it for. So enough So the cooking of dyes is kadeshi ru'in ledavar shemevashton osan lo. It's to make it the measure that you need it for, namely, Amar Avram, the Ravid says, kadeh letzpoa ben beged katan, enough dye to paint the little garment, right, the pisvacha, the little cap that they put for a baby, to dye that little cap of wool. So the Rambam says that when we talk about cooking, it refers to baking, it refers to cooking of food, it refers to making dyes, it refers to heating water. Because what's the definition of cooking? The definition of cooking is changing an object through heat. Any activity where through application of heat, the object's nature changes, that's the biblical malacha of cooking. So if you take a piece of metal, you throw a piece of metal into an oven, and because of the heat, the metal starts to melt, that's cooking. That's bishul on Shabbos. It's not only about food. It's any heat. Now, what's the definition of heat? We'll get to that soon. But when you have heat of a significant heat, when you have heat that's significant, and you've changed the object by virtue of the heat, that is the malach of cooking. So it could be that you wanted to make the object that was soft hard. Maybe you wanted to make a hard object soft. Maybe you wanted to make dough into a bread. You wanted to make an apple into applesauce. You put it into the heat, and by putting it into the heat, and then the heat changing its nature, that is cooking. Yeah, please, a question.
So the interesting thing is, when you cook actual water, you're not changing anything. So when you're saying changing something, that would exclude water.
Beautiful. So water is different. Very good point. Water is different. Liquids are different than solids. In solids, it's the heat changing it from being, let's say, an apple, which is fresh, into applesauce, which is a whole different product. You know, people who have teeth problems would like the applesauce. People who like mushy stuff like the applesauce. So changing that. And in liquids, the definition is raising the temperature to the point that it's now very hot. In liquids, it doesn't change. It's only about raising the temperature. So that creates astringency with liquids, because we're going to get to this point soon, is the topic of bishul achar bishul. Once you've cooked something, can you recook it again? Ein bishul achar bishul. Once something's baked, that's it. It's been baked. It can't be baked again. But in liquids, it's different, because the liquid is only about the heat. So if you heat up the liquid, and now it cools down, you can then again heat it up. So in liquid, yesh bishul achar bishul. There could be cooking after cooking in liquids. In a solid, ein bishul achar bishul. But that's an excellent point. So again, when you change an object through heat, liquids don't change through heat. In liquids, there the definition of cooking is to now make it very hot. From being cold, now it became very hot. That's already bishul. I see now on the Zoom, Danny.
Question, Rabbi. You can't open the faucet because water comes out of the boiler and cold water goes back in.
Good.
What do you do in the winter when you open the door and the heat drops, okay, and you're creating the boiler to go back on to create heat, or in the summer when the air conditioner is on, okay, and it shuts off because it brought it to, let us say, 63 or 65 degrees, and you open the door. Now heat comes into the house and the heat, and you're turning on the heat, basically. I mean, the air conditioning.
Beautiful. That's an excellent, excellent question. Very, very good point. So when you open the door and then, you know, cold air comes in, and then eventually the thermostat notices and it turns on the boiler again to send the hot, you know, air or the hot water again through the pipes to warm up the house again. Or in the summer, you open the door and the hot air comes in and the room starts to warm up, and that again sets off the thermostat, which then again turns on the air conditioning. So you say it should be the same thing as turning on the faucet and then the cold water coming into the boiler. So the difference is like this. When you open the door, it's not a guarantee that the thermostat is going to be triggered. It might happen. It might not happen. So when you have a situation where something might happen or it might not happen, that's not a psik reshe. That's not a guarantee to happen. So since it's not a guarantee to happen, it's called davar she'eno miskavin. It might happen, but if it does happen, you weren't deliberately going, trying to make it happen. So that's allowed on Shabbos. Because again, we learn all the laws of Shabbos from the Mishkan. The Torah describes the activity of the Mishkan as meleches machsheves, deliberate action. Melacha, action, work, which is with machshava, with thought, with deliberation. So there where it's a davar shena miskavin, it might happen, might not happen, you're not intending for it to happen, that's allowed. But when you turn on the hot water faucet, it's not a question, maybe water will come in, maybe water won't come in. After a certain amount of time, water will come in. It's a guarantee. So once there's that guarantee, then already you get into the issue of bishul. Now there is a way to turn on the hot water faucet if you turned off the pipe of bringing new water in. If that's it, you know, no new water is going to come in. You have all the water that was in the boiler that got heated from before Shabbos. You can drain it. That's no different than taking water out of an urn. When you heated up the water in the urn before Shabbos, you can drain the water that's in the boiler. But if you haven't turned off the input of the new water coming in, you turn on the faucet to wash your dishes. An hour long of washing dishes, certainly there's going to be new water coming in, and then you get into the issue of bishul. So if we look here, Tishmirat Shabbos Kilchasa,
what do you do, Rabbi? Excuse me. What do you do in the mikvah on Shabbos?
So going to the mikvah on Shabbos, it's different. There's a mitzvah. It's a mitzvah to go to the mikvah.
Yeah, but you take your water out of the mikvah, but more water goes into the mikvah.
No. No, new water goes into the mikvah.
Sure does.
Danny's mikvah.
No, not in. No, it's the pipes are all blocked before Shabbos. Nothing's going in on Shabbos.
Okay. I'll buy it right now. We'll talk about it, Rabbi.
Okay.
There's a new device called Shabha that you can attach to your water boiler that randomly regulates the inflow of water into the boiler, which then people are saying that you can then use hot water because then you're not directly causing more water to come in every time you open the faucet because it's randomly regulating when the boiler refills.
Oh, very interesting.
Do you activate that just on Shabbos or only?
It's on a timer that basically only activates on Shabbos.
That's very interesting.
I don't really understand the difference between if you open the door in hot weather, if you have it open long enough, you know the temperature is going to drop and the thermostat will. You don't know exactly when that's going to happen. And it's the same thing with the hot water. If you use a bit of hot water to wash your hand, let's say, you know water will be coming in, but you don't know when the pilot light is going to trigger the heating element in the, you know, it's also based on a thermostat built into the hot water heater. So you don't know when that's going to trigger.
You don't need it to trigger. With hot water, with the boiler, I don't need the boiler to go on for me to be violating Shabbos. The moment water flows in, it's already a violation because the water is going into a kli rishon. It's going into it's going into a pot that's on the flame. It's going into the pot that cooked things.
Right.
You know, when I have a door, you know, maybe the thermostat will be triggered, maybe it won't. So, there's a difference here. When you're turning on hot water and you know water's coming in, you know, once the water level once you drain a certain amount of water out right away, new water is coming in. That water that comes in right away, that's getting cooked. So that's one act, which is right away a problem. It's a psik ratio. There's a guarantee unless you have this device that
you love hot water. Your home's heated by hot water. I mean, a lot of homes are. It's already happening. The water is already coming out of the boiler.
Right. So is when you turn on the shower,
it can fill because the heat in the house turns on that close to coils and the heat's in it.
And they're bringing in new water all the time.
Constantly. Yeah, my house has that. It literally does it all the time. Well, you can leave the door open for a little while.
I'm saying without you doing it, if your heat is constantly running, new water is coming in. Yeah. So whether or not you turn on the faucet,
and it's not going to add more new water to come in.
It's right.
Your system, your this heat system that way? Is that hooked up to your hot water tank, or is that hooked up to the furnace heat?
But I think you're still causing more.
You may not.
If you're not, then
again,
I know the issue comes up in apartment buildings.
Right?
You have an apartment building. If you have non-Jews, so they're turning on their hot water for their showers, for washing their dishes.
So
now the question is, you have a great majority of non-Jews. Mm. You say, by the time I turn on my water, it's possible that my water is water that was already in the boiler. Mm. My water is not bringing the water in.
Rabbi, how about solar energy?
Oh, that's a very good point. Solar energy, yes. That's a big discussion. Yeah. Solar energy is a big question. Yeah, there are those who are lenient with solar energy, and then there are those who are more strict with solar energy. But that's a wonderful... It could be different, especially the Israeli Dud Shemesh, where they have the sun heating the water. It could be that that's okay. Look, in the Shmir HaShabbos, Kilchasa says, Echad HaMevashel... The echad hatzola, whether somebody cooks or roasts, umetagen or fries, va'ofe or bakes, kolamachshir davar la'achil al yedei choma eish, if you've prepared something to make it edible through the heat of a fire, o toldasa, or through something that was hot because fire made it hot. Let's say you put a piece of metal into a fire, then you take the metal and put it into water. That's toldasa eish, the derivative of fire. Hareza over al Isur Bishul, then he's violating the prohibition of Bishul. So we saw that there's a difference between liquids and solids. Solids are to make it edible. Liquids are to make it hot. What's the definition of edible? So the Gemara says here in Masechta Menachos that the definition of edible is edible kima'achol ben drusai, like the food of this fellow ben drusai. Ben drusai was a bandit. Amazing. Must have had some big schuss that we quote him all the time. Ma'achol ben Drusai. What he did. I don't know what he did. I wish we would know. But ben Drusai, he was a bandit, and he was stealing, and he was on the run. So he didn't have time to cook his food fully. So he would cook it the bare minimum and then eat it. So that shows us that that's what's defined as cooking. Now, how much is the bare minimum? So Rashi on the very bottom of the page, now turning to the other page, Rashi says... it's the Gemara Menachos. It's the second line. Ma'achol ben Drusai, the food of ben Drusai, shlish hu mevushal. It's cooked a third. However, if you look down, two lines beneath this, the Rambam in Hilchos Shabbos Perek Tes Halacha Hey, the Rambam says, hiniach basar al gabi gecholim. If you put meat on coals, in nitzla bo kigro geres, if a fig worth of that meat got roasted. Even in two or three spots, chayiv, that would be the biblical sin of cooking on Shabbos. Lo nitzlebo kigro geres, if it wasn't cooked like a fig, less than a fig was cooked, I want a special kula, but the whole thing actually, not a fig worth was fully roasted, but the whole thing was cooked. Chatzi bishul, the whole thing is cooked halfway, then chayiv. So according to the Rambam, ma'achol ben drusai is to be cooked halfway. And according to Rashi, it's to be cooked a third. How do you measure a third cooked versus a half cooked? So we know it's something is fully cooked, but how do you know what a third cooked is? So the Chazonir says it's time. Let's say the recipe says you take this cake, put it into the oven for 45 minutes, and then it bakes. So if you cooked it for 15 minutes, that's Ma'achol ben Drusai according to Rashi. You cooked it for 22 and a half minutes, that's Ma'achol ben Drusai, according to the Rambam. Now, what about...
As long as it's one-third cooked?
We'll get to that. It's a question, because one-third cooked, you're still improving it. That's a Machlokas Rishonim. So now, what's cooking for liquids? So cooking for liquids is a different definition. It's a certain level of heat, and that's the Gemara Masechta Shabbos. The Gemara says, Amar Yehuda Mar Shmuel, Rav Yehuda's the name of Shmuel, Echad shemen ve'echad mayim, both oil or water, yad soledes bo aser. If it's cooked to the point where your hand pulls back, if you were to touch it, you feel, oh my gosh, I'm getting burned, I'm pulling my hand back, that's not allowed. Ain yad soledes bo, but if it's not hot enough for me to pull my hand back, mutter, then it's permitted, that's not considered cooked. Hei chidami yad soledes bo, what's the definition of pulling the hand back? Rachba said, Kol shekreso shel tinok nichnes. Hot enough that were it to be on the stomach of a baby, he would get burnt. All right, well, what's that? Every person's different. Some people pull their hand back at, you know, one level of heat. Other people put their hand back at another, at a different level of heat. So here we have different opinions. Go to the second to last paragraph here. There's the Darchei Tshuva. The Darchei Tshuva was a Hasidic Rebbe, Rebbe of Munkach, and he wrote an amazing book on Yoredeya. So in Simon Kufhei in Yoredeya, the Darchei Tshuva proves that what he thinks Yad Soledes Bo is not what other people told him. Other people said, if it's hotter than spit, you're in your mouth, you have spit, anything hotter than your spit, that's already Yad Soledes Bo. So he said, I don't think it's that, that's not hot at all. He said, no, Yad Soledes Bo means at least 40 degrees Celsius. How does he know that? Because he quoted the chalav afilu b'shata d'cholven leit sonanhu. When you milk a cow, the milk that comes out is defined as cold in Yoredeya. That's not considered hot. So we're ahead. Yadavshi yos mikdei chmiva sarokna. That's certainly hotter than the heat of spit. Ad shir hachalav shecholven osu me'apara k'moshan aron b'chush. The chalav b'shasa chalivu l'cham yoser mechmiva sarok. Even though when you milk a cow, it's certainly hotter than the heat of spit. Even so, the Bahag says when you milk a cow, it's considered cold. So even in biblical laws, we shouldn't be more strict. As long as it's at the heat of what a cow's milk is when it's being milked, it's not hot enough to be prohibited. A few of the kli rishon, even in a direct first-hand utensil. Okay, in terms of rabbinic laws, then we should be mako to a different standard. So according to the Darkei Tshuva, the definition of heat of Yad Soledes Bo is 40 degrees Celsius. Rav Moshe Feinstein, of blessed memory, he was a little bit more lenient. He said that the definition of Yad Soledes Bo is 43 degrees Celsius, and he said, I tried it with my own hand. I put my hand into hot water. At 43 degrees already wasn't comfortable, so that's already the definition of Yad Soledes Bo. But he said, you know, other people might think it's much higher. Might think that it's 71 degrees Celsius, 160 degrees Fahrenheit. So he said, take both stringencies. And Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, and that's the view of the Shmir Shabbos Kilchasa, he said that the heat of Yad Soledes Bo is 45 degrees Celsius. So, Machon Somet, they created a boiler where the water in the boiler never reaches 40 degrees Celsius. It can only get to 39 degrees Celsius. So they said, once it's only 39 degrees Celsius, that's not considered Yad Soledes Bo. So again, looking at the Gemara says, Yad Soledes Bo Usser. If it's hot enough that you pull your hand back, that's prohibited. But if it's not Yad Soledes Bo, it's mutter, it's allowed. So with this boiler that can only get up to 39 degrees Celsius, people can wash dishes with warmish water, pretty hot water.
If you change the temperature in your boiler, it technically would be allowed?
Yeah, right. If it can't get to 40 degrees Celsius, so then, you're not able to cook because it's not hot enough to be able to cook. It's pretty cool, you know. 39 degrees Celsius. What is 39 degrees Celsius? 102. 102. That's so bad.
Kids, that's hot enough.
It's very hot.
It's not so bad.
Yeah.
Well, so bad.
Spit is 98, so it's not that far off.
Right? 110 and 160. So how does that work? Can you explain how that works?
You'll see, whatever way, you'll always try to be mindful. So you'd say that in terms of what you shouldn't heat, right? You shouldn't heat up to 110. And you could only say something's already cooked if it's at 160. Otherwise, you wouldn't say it's cooked yet. So he would always be strict. Okay, so again, this is a little bit of an introduction to Hilchos Shabbos. Again, as we learn, we discover that there are leniencies, right? If you keep things at a low level of heat, right, 102 degrees, it's not so terrible. And that's already, that would then be okay to use that type of a boiler that only is stuck at 102 degrees, because that's not Yad Soled Espo. Nobody thinks that that's boiling water. Nobody thinks that that's water that's getting cooked. And it can't get cooked, doesn't have the ability to get cooked in such a situation, and that it would be okay to bring more water into that type of a boiler and to use that type of water for washing dishes. In terms of the shower, again, when you learn the halachos, you discover new things. So the Gemara says that there's a prohibition of bathing on Shabbos because it might lead to cooking water. Obviously, if you're going to, you know, easily we turn on a shower, then new water's going to come in. Water's going to get cooked. However, I saw that Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach has a very interesting leniency. Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach feels that any time Chazal made a gzeira, a decree, because of something might lead to something else, it's permitted b'makom tzar. If there's a lot of pain, it would be permitted. They wouldn't make the decree b'makom tzar. So therefore, he paskined that people who are sick, let's say you have somebody who's special needs, you know, or ill person, or somebody who literally showers every day. Sometimes there are people who shower multiple times a day, shower three or four times a day. People like that who are literally showering every day, he felt they are allowed to shower on Shabbos. That they're, this gezeira against showering doesn't apply to them. So if you can get around these issues of cooking, right? Shlomo Zalman Orbach thinks that the prohibition of rechitza doesn't apply to makom tzar. So again, the person has to be honest with himself. You know, when I was in yeshiva, there were a lot of guys who went a week without showering.
It's more like a circular reference, because you can't shower because you may come to cook
correct
boil water. But if you know that you're not going to boil the water...
Right, but that's still... Once they make a decree, the decree stands on its own, right? It stands on its own, even if in this particular situation a person's not going to get into trouble. But the decree itself, the Shlomo Zalman Orbach says, is removed like b'makom tzar for a person...
Let's say, or a lake. Would that still not be allowed? You obviously have no issue of heating the water...
Right,
but
so then,
you're right,
right,
the issue of bathing.
Or, right.
So would that be allowed or not be allowed?
No, bathing in a lake is not allowed because it's bathing, and there's a prohibition against bathing. But Shlomo Zalman Orbach's Chiddush, which is amazing, says nowadays there are a lot of people who literally shower every single day. For them not to have a shower one day is very, very painful. It's tsar. And for people like that, there is no, they could bathe in a lake on a hot summer day. And even at home, if they had this Tzomet boiler, which is limiting the heat to 102 degrees, they could shower on Shabbos. They have to be careful with their hair. They can't wring the water out of their hair. But he would allow showering on Shabbos. Really an amazing leniency.
Remember, when it comes to the hot water heaters, like in your kitchen, next to your sink, hot water. Let's assume that it doesn't reheat.
He's going to scour Amazon.
Does the... Pipe. Is the pipe considered a cleanie, or to get to the cleanie, you have to ask to put it into a cup? Do we assume that when it travels through the pipes, it cools off?
No, it doesn't cool. It's all connected.
Also,
yeah. Thank you very much. Thank you, Ben.